is Arnold Baden, who is a professor emeritus in the Department of Economics here at Iowa State University. He received his PhD in economics in 1961 from Columbia University. 67. And became a professor emeritus about 1999. He has taught courses here in Bayesian econometrics and often has attended our seminars and is quite knowledgeable in inference theory. He was on a faculty improvement leave 1980 to 1981 at the University of California at Berkeley under the supervision of David Blackwell. He has three publications in statistics, a book in which measure theory is applied to social science, an article on the foundations of probability, and an article in the Annals of Probability on the subject, the existence of regular conditional probabilities. Today he will talk to us on Fisher's Fundamental Theorem of Natural Selection. This has been around in the literature a long time, since Fisher's book of 1930 called The Genetical Theory of Natural Selection. It's rather fuzzily stated, but as often with Fisher's writings, fuzzily but interestingly stated. And in fact, that book was called by none other than Kolmogorov, Das Wundervolle Buch. And since that time, these few cryptic statements have stimulated much research in statistical genetics and also in economics. None other than Paul Samuelson has written a few papers on this subject. So it's my pleasure to introduce Arnold Baden, who will speak to us today on the pure theory of natural selection, Fisher's Fundamental Theorem, and beyond.
Explain the word pure. From the very beginning, the idea of natural selection was thought to apply to lots of other things besides that which Darwin applied to, and that tendency has been growing. So you can say, roughly speaking, wherever there's competition, there's going to be some kind of natural selection process, whether it's competition among politicians for office, among nations for power, even among ideas. And in fact, I'll try to end this lecture with drawing some kind of analogy between statistical inference and the principle of natural selection. So you speak of the concept of the competition of ideas. Let's say each one is fighting for a little piece of the probability pie, and they compete in that way. But in any case, what I'm trying to do is to avoid the particular institutional features of any of these specific areas and just take a look at the essence of what happens when you abstract from these particular situations. Now, it could well be that things become so wishy-washy that you don't get any results whatsoever. That remains to be seen. The best you can do is try. Let's say here's the essence of this situation, this situation, that situation. We just see what's common to all these things and see if we can develop an interesting theory at that level. If we can, that's good, because it means it's going to be a very general theory which applies to a whole bunch of different situations. Okay, so I'm taking the concept of long-term differential growth rates as the fundamental concept that's involved over here. And let's suppose we have some kind of mass distribution over a set which I'll call theta. And I have a mass distribution, let's say mu, on this. And I'm using the word mass in a very general sense. These could be numbers of these entities, or physical tonnages, or populations, or total wealth if we're dealing with countries and so forth and so on. I don't really care what these particular mus mean. I'm just taking a look at the idea that you have an overall just the next year and so forth and so on. I'm assuming that this G of theta is constant. That's where the long-term concept comes in. So the idea is this. You've got this overall mass at some particular time. It's growing at different rates, and therefore the overall mass is redistributing itself toward those areas which are growing more rapidly and away from those areas which are growing less rapidly. And is there anything you can say in general about this situation? Well, let's take this G of theta and take a look at its distribution. This is the real line. This is the growth rate line. So each particular point over here gets mapped into this. This point will be G of theta. Here's another theta over here, let's say theta prime. That's growing at that rate. So forth and so on. So let's say here's such a growing at rate zero. This is positive growth, this is negative growth. We've got the entire line of our disposal. By the way, don't hesitate to ask questions or make comments. If there's anything that's not clear, just shout it out. So we've got that particular thing, and this induces a distribution on the line. We have this overall mass distribution, Ut, that redistributes itself to a distribution Mt on the line. That's the usual concept of the distribution of a random variable is what we're using over here. That is to say, if I take two particular growth rates, let's say minus 0.3 and minus 0.2, the mass that I assign to this will be the total mass of all points which are growing between minus 0.3 and minus 0.2. This is just an image measure, so to speak, that you move up on this. And of course, it varies over time. So what we have to do is put it in a time axis. This is time over there. And if you think of this distribution as being, let's say something like that, if you look at some future time, the distribution, roughly speaking, is going to move to the right. Why? Because the further to the right you go, the faster it's growing at that point. So things are going to be moving to the right in some kind of generalized sense. And we can ask all kinds of questions. For example, is there any distribution such that it just relocates, it just moves literally, so it comes from the same location thing? One thing we, in fact, will answer is the question is, necessary and sufficient conditions for a particular distribution to have that property. You could ask the same property about changes in scale. Let me also mention that while this has a dimension of time, of course, this has a dimension of 1 over time because of the concept of relative rate. All of these growth rates are the same. Now, this, incidentally, is precisely the same with what Fisher called fitness. So he called this the fitness line. We're referring to Fisher's fundamental. Okay, now, between a time t1 and a time t2, a unit of mass over here will be transformed, let's say, if it's growing at the rate g of y. G of theta. It's growing at the rate g of theta. One unit of mass will be transformed to e to the t2 minus t1 times g of theta. Okay, but looks like g of theta is 3% a year. Then one unit of mass over here will be transformed to 1.03 after a year. It will be transformed to 1.03 squared after 2 years and so forth and so on. Talking about continuous transformation, continuously compounded interest, you'll grow at the exponential rate. If we go over here, we'll refer to this as x, and something at time 0, which had a unit of 1, at time t will have a unit of e to the t times x, or whatever the point is. In other words, this will grow to e to tx, where t is minus 0.2. This over here will grow to a larger number, this will grow to a still larger number, and so forth. So that the overall distribution is going to be shifting to the right, as I said. Now you'll notice that, in a sense, this entire system is rigidly determined. Once you're given mu zero, for example, everything else is fixed. Because mu t you can find just by these particular points growing. If I have a, let's say a distribution at mu at m zero, the distribution at mt would be given by this. Let's say a is an integral or Lorentzian in general. It would be the integral over this a of e to the tx integrated with respect to the distribution of pi 2. Because, any, as I say, any particular point over over here at x is going to be growing by e to the tx, and we just integrated as such. If we take the entire line, we have the entire mass of pi t. Total mass of time t plus v. Okay, that is the root of e to the 2x tx with respect to the mass of time 0, which is equal to of ux with respect to the mass of time t. Because I can take this one. derivation of local generating functions. So it's essentially the same thing. But from now on, things are going to get more interesting. Just compare the left-hand term over there and the right-hand term. And you see that this has to be the Taylor series expansion. This thing over here, power is a U around the base point. That following must be true. In other words, this coefficient, which multiplies u to the n over n factorial, has to be the nth derivative of n sub t. Let's try n equals 1 and see what that looks like. I'll use the dot to represent time derivative. M dot equals m times a sub 1, or m dot over m equals a sub 1. And that just states that the relative rate of growth, or the growth rate of total mass, is equal to the average. Let's take a look at the n plus first. On the one hand, that's equal to m times a sub n plus 1. Just plug in n plus 1. On the other hand, it's equal to the derivative of this right hand side. And that's what this thing turns out to be. That again represents the derivative with respect to time. This is equal to this. Divide through by m, and you find that the fundamental dynamics for the moment. A m dot is a plus 1 minus a 1. Where a 1 is equal to m dot. I've taken this expression, I've divided through by m. I'm going to drop some over there. M dot over m, I just showed to be equal to a1 before. So a n plus 1 equals a1 times a n plus a n dot, which is the same as this. So this is the fundamental dynamical equation for the moments. Let's see what this looks like when n is equal to 1. Says that the rate of change of the mean is equal to variance. That's exactly Fisher's fundamental theorem. So we derive Fisher's fundamental theorem, among other things. Now, often we can do even better than that. Now, what I want to do is introduce cumulants. Cumulants are defined as follows. Relationship between
sequence of thoughts from one, if you just expand the screen, you have to keep in mind that A0 is equal to 1, because anything from the 0 power is 1, therefore its expectation is 1. So when you expand the logarithm over here, you're going to get always positive powers over here. That's why this starts. Okay, now if you were to write this out and express it in terms of the moments, you get the following. So C1 is equal to A1. C2 equals B2. That's the variance of the distribution. C3 equals B3. That's the skewness of the distribution. I put it in parentheses because the textbook definition is a slight variant of this. And C4 equals B4 minus 3B2 squared. That's the kurtosis. Again, I put it in parentheses because it's slightly different from the textbook definition of this concept. But it's trying to get at the same thing. Okay, now, let's consider the logarithm of m of t plus u. M of t plus u is an analytic function, as we've indicated. In other words, it has a power series expansion. The logarithm is an analytic function. Therefore, this thing over here has to be an analytic function. So it can be expanded. Let's write its expansion as this. And I'm using the same notation as I use for cumulants. The reason is these are the cumulants. Remember that m of t plus w times summation n goes from 0 to infinity of a and t to the n factorial. So if I take the logarithm of this, I get the logarithm of mt plus logarithm of this, which by definition is the cumulus. So this thing is the same as this, except we now have one extra term. We have a constant term. It's 0 over t, and that is logarithm of m sub t. Okay. Question, why doesn't that ever appear in statistics? Well, the answer is because you're almost always dealing with probabilities. For a probability, m is equal to 1, and therefore its logarithm is 0. Therefore, there's no constant term. But now, if you're dealing with more general mass distributions, which are not necessarily equal to 1, you have a constant term in there. Now, and it turns out that, we'll see what it turns out to be. But in any case, we have this as the expansion. And let's try to pull the same trick that we pulled with the moments. That is to say, this is the Taylor series expansion for that in terms of powers of u around the point t. It must be that the nth derivative of a1 of t. And the derivative of this, of course, is just m now on, we got something new. Because not only is the rate of change equal of the mean equal to the variance, the rate of change of the variance is equal to the skewness, the rate of change of the skewness is equal to kurtosis, and so on for an infinite number of other ranges. Okay, so we have these results, generalized Fisher. The question is, can you do something with them? The answer is yes. Let me try to answer the question. What is the nature of the distribution, if any, which has the property that at successive times it's just translated itself? Okay, here's the theorem. Following our equivalent. Translate, I'm talking about the relativized distribution. I mean, obviously the thing is growing, so you wouldn't expect it to have the same mass over time. But you might expect it to have the same shape over time. And indeed, that's what I'm looking for. So when I say this, I'm talking about the relativized distribution. Two. Variance is a constant. That the variance at each of these points for all time is the same. Turns out that they're very vice versa. Three. Means grow linearly. That is to say, A1 of t equals, say, alpha plus beta t. Cn dot equals Cn plus 1, the proof of this is really trivial, almost trivial, well, not quite trivial, but almost. For example, let's take a look at this one and this one, okay? Well, the rate of change of the mean is equal to the variance. If the mean is linear, then the variance has to be constant. The rate of change of the variance is equal to the skewness. If all m's are symmetric, skewness is zero. In fact, symmetry is equivalent to all of the odd numbered Cn being zero. So if C3 is zero, then including it by integration, C2 is a constant somewhere. So these are all equivalent to each other. How about translates? Well, it's not difficult to show that if you have two distributions that are translates of each other, all of the Cs are identical past one. In other words, the C2 is the same for both, C3 is the same for both, all the way to the end. So in particular, if they're all translates, then the variance is a constant, and so forth and so on. So in other words, it's not hard to show. And finally, you can characterize the normal distribution by it's having just non-zero C1 and C2. Normal distribution is the unique distribution that has all cumulants after the second one equals zero. So, and finally over here, M0 is normal just by plugging in the transformation from M0 to MT, you find that Okay, but that's the distribution on growth line. What's going to happen over time? Wellness is going to move to the right at the rate V. This is also going to move to the right at the rate V. Therefore, they will maintain the same distance from each other. Right? Doesn't this seem to contradict the idea that the normal is the only invariant distribution? Well, the answer is no, but I'll let you think about it. So, you might just try to figure out why, in fact, it looks invariant, but it's actually not invariant. So. Okay, now there's another theorem, which is a little bit more difficult to prove, so I'll just state what the theorem is. Suppose I asked not for these m's coming from the same location family, but from the same scale family. In other words, this is distribution at one point, distribution at another point is going to be stretched out in this way. Does this identify any particular family? Or the same condition? The answer is it's the gamma. Gamma distribution has the property such that all of its transformations are in the same gamma, all gammas. And that's the answer to that one. But I won't attempt to prove it because it will sit back to sign. Okay, now what I wanted to do was to indicate how to make this more realistic. I mean, obviously things are left out, quite a lot of things are being left out. In particular, we haven't said anything about competition, which you might think is the defining concept involved in natural selection. I mean, after all, Darwin and Wallace independently thought of it after reading Malthus, and Malthus is all about competition. So what you have to do is to modify things. First of all, you have to select M0 so that A1 is equal to 0. In other words, what we want is the mass to be fixed in some sense or other. So the mass to be fixed, remember, M not over M is equal to A1. Therefore, A1 has to be 0 if the mass is fixed. But that's not good enough, because unless you have a trivial distribution where everything is concentrated and all everything is growing at the same rate, A1 itself is immediately going to positive territory because it's increasing at variance, which is always positive. So in other words, the M is going up faster than exponentially. It's going up exponentially, but the rate of increase itself is rising. So you've got a real problem over there, and you've got to do something that, in effect, forces the A1 to stay where it is. You've got to modify the principle. And one way of doing that would be to assume that G is not constant, but G itself is moving downward for everybody. In other words, let's say something like this. Let's say G of theta depends on time. And GTC equals variance. Sorry, minus the variance. Because remember, what's happening is that everything is moving to the right at the rate of the variance. And if you've got the G's falling at the rate of the variance, you'll just cancel out these two effects. And this actually harks back to something that Fisher said. He said, for any particular species of organism, the environment is always getting worse. It's always deteriorating. So you can say this minus variance is a measure of the fact that competition, you've got a certain total capacity for all of life together. In effect, what's happening is that any particular trait is doing worse and worse as time goes by. So that would be one thing. Another thing would be to something that we haven't done yet. Once you've got the system of traits over here, it's fixed. There's no way of introducing a new trait. If it started out with mass zero, it's going to be forever with mass zero under this particular setup over there. Obviously, what you have to do is to indicate some kind of movement over here so that something with a particular trait can move off to something lots and lots of ways of doing that, and obviously I don't have time to elaborate. I haven't really thought about it too much, as a matter of fact. And so forth and so on. So there are various ways of trying to modify this, but what I'd like to do to finish this off is to try to apply this to statistical inference. Suppose that that, in fact, is the reason I called this theta to begin with. I had a different notation in my paper, but I called it theta because I want to think of this as being parameter space or hypothesis space in some sense. Natural selection process. I suppose that we have a observations are going to be independent. I try to think canonical setup in statistics. You observe, let's say, C1 at the first time. Distribution of these things is distribution according to beta. that natural selection going on in favor of the hypothesis that he knows or believes to be true. So the question is, this is something that I just thought of this ridiculous scene in the last couple of days. So I haven't really looked it out. But you think of not just one scene, but several scenes. Process